Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 13th of December 2019. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. And your readers today are Victoria Hooton.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are Hospital Shake-Up Threatening Unit, Crisis Appeal Starts Strongly, and First Visit to Railway for Iconic Engine. And so please could we have the story behind the first headline, Victoria?
Hospital shake-up threatening unit. Staff members fear that a shake-up of surgery services provided at Winchester Hospital will have a negative impact on patient care and result in job losses, despite counterclaims from the managing trust. The transformation of orthopaedics at Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, known as HHFT, which manages Royal Hampshire County Hospital, the RHCH, was implemented on December the 4th, and concerns have already been raised by those working on the unit. The changes mean that inpatient trauma operations no longer take place in Winchester. Instead, walk-in patients are often in pain, are then forced to travel 20 miles to Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, the BNH, for emergency surgery on broken bones. Those who are brought to hospital by ambulance are being taken directly to Basingstoke Hospital. Despite the public engagement process running until February, the Trust is, as previously reported, is testing some of the ideas earlier in order to provide better care this winter. However, a member of staff who wished not to be named approached the Chronicle with claims that the team leading the reconfiguration, I quote, have glossed over important details which could and will put patient safety at risk. They went on to say, trauma patients who require admission or surgery will now have to be treated at BNH. This will increase the suffering of patients as they face longer journeys to hospital, especially for those who live south of Winchester, such as Bishop's Waltham, Fair Oak and Eastleigh. Another quote, unfortunately, patients have no choice or say in the matter. It is unclear if it is fair and open public consultation has actually taken place prior to the implementation of the project. Unquote. The changes are affecting all trauma patients who need admissions or surgical intervention. Those who can be treated as outpatients will continue to be cared for at RHCH. The morale of staff working at the trauma and orthopaedics unit at RHCH is said to be very low, with uncertainties over redundancies. The staff member continued to say, staff are worried about potential job losses, especially the nurses who are involved in trauma care at RHCH. Some experienced staff have already left, including a number who are highly experienced. Staff are also concerned about negative impact on patient care and safety due to the delay in providing necessary and prompt care. Another quote, while doctors are expected to work at both sites, there are, however, uncertainties regarding nurses who are yet to find out how the change will impact them. Julie Mascarey, the Chief Operating Officer at HHFT, said that despite the concerns, there have been no redundancies made yet, but the Trust did not confirm whether any would be made in the future. We are excited about this new service model for trauma and orthopaedic care, which incorporates the very latest thinking on national best practice and will enable us to provide the best possible care for all our patients, Ms. Mascarey said. She continued, throughout this process, we have engaged and consulted with our staff, integrating their thoughts and comments into our plans. We have also worked closely with our partners in the Hampshire County Council and are currently collecting feedback from affected patients. She added, a dedicated ambulance is available to transfer patients between sites if it is assessed to be safe. Patients are able to make their own arrangements also.
Crisis appeal starts strongly. A cash-strapped cancer charity has almost reached the £50,000 milestone to mark the start of a pledge to continue supporting people with cancer. Wessex Cancer Trust, which urgently needs to raise £600,000 by January the 31st, has officially raised more than £37,000 in a week since it sent out a public plea on Tuesday, December the 3rd. It comes after the Cancer Support Service reached the £10,000 mark in one day. The self-funded Chandler's Ford-based charity has provided free emotional and practical support to anyone living with cancer in Hampshire, Dorset and the Isle of Wight for 40 years. After facing financial issues due to an increase in demand for their services, the charity said they needed to turn to the public as a last resort or risk having to close. It has also been hit by a 65% reduction in people leaving a gift in their will and a decline in the high street, which has seen its charity shop sales fall by 15%. A large gift has been delayed, and taken together, these factors have tipped the charity into crisis. While it costs £100,000 a month to run Wessex Cancer Trust, it is estimated there will be almost 165,000 people living with cancer, according to Public Health England. Chief Executive Kate Allen said, "The money raised makes them more determined to keep services going." She said, "Reaching almost £50,000 in just a week is wonderful. And if we can keep this momentum going, we hope to be able to save the charity." What has been really moving and humbling is the feedback from people we have helped over the years. We have had people dropping in with gifts, sending heartfelt letters and posting lovely comments on our Just Giving donations page and social media. It is a constant reminder of the impact the charity has on the local community and makes us ever more determined to keep our services going. The Trust helps around 11,000 people a year through its support centres in Chandlersford, Hythe, Bournemouth and the Isle of Wight. And the article's accompanied by a picture of CEO Kate Allen and a picture of a Trust support centre.
First visit to railway for iconic engine. Train spotters will be able to experience the world's most famous railway engine as it visits the Watercress Line for the first time next year. The record-breaking Flying Scotsman will make a number of stops to the Heritage Railway in February 2020, allowing fans to travel behind her. The York's National Railway Museum-owned exquisite 97-ton A3-class locomotive will visit on February the 14th and 29th and March the 1st, 7th and 8th. Watercress Line director Simon Baggett said, "The entire Watercress Line team is delighted that our bid to host this national treasure has been successful. And we are very grateful to the National Railway Museum for giving us the opportunity to host such a unique and historic event, to operate and display such a famous locomotive. It will be the first time Flying Scotsman has visited the Watercress Line, and we're sure rail enthusiasts and the public across Hampshire and further afield will be thrilled to have the opportunity to see her up close and in action." And just days after the announcement, tickets for all five visits have already sold out, with fans eager to step aboard. Costing £7,944 to build and completed in 1923 by the London and North Eastern Railway, Flying Scotsman was named after the prestigious London to Edinburgh Express train service, which the locomotive helped to operate, with a journey time of 8 hours. In 1924, Flying Scotsman appeared at the British Empire Exhibition in London. In 1934,
she became the first locomotive to reach 100 miles per hour. But in 1963, British Railways withdrew the locomotive from service. Purchased by the National Railway Museum in 2004, Flying Scotsman was restored thanks to a £4.2 million 10-year project funded by the National Heritage Memorial Fund and the Heritage Lottery Fund, as well as from public donations. And there is a very lovely photograph of the Flying Scotsman on the rails in the countryside, so that's something to look forward to.
And here we now have the death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Arnold, Doris Arnold, after a short illness, aged 89. Bowden, June Bowden, peacefully, aged 82. Campbell, Jill Ursula Campbell, at Westacre Nursing Home, aged 88. Faithful, Valerie Faithful, at home, aged 78. Greenaway, Miss Beryl Ruth Greenaway, formerly of Twyford, aged 89. Linter, John Linter, aged 91. Merritt, Ronald Merritt, aged 82. Percival, Cecil Victor Vic Percival of Alsford, aged 87. And Skillman, Anton Skillman, aged 84. And now we'll go over to Victoria, please, for Christian Comment.
Christian Comment, the title today, Something to Vote For, by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, Canon Principal, Diocese of Winchester. For 14 years, I didn't vote in national elections. I was unable to. I didn't have a vote. As a UK national living in the Netherlands for all that time, I was heavily invested in that country. My children grew up there, they went to schools there, and we used the National Health Service. I drove on the roads and motorways. I paid taxes. We could vote in the local council elections and the regional elections, but we could not choose the nation's political leaders. So when I returned to live in the UK for 4 years, 4 years ago, I was grateful that I could vote for the parliamentary candidates. In fact, to my surprise, I became much more politically active. When we go to the polling station today and receive our ballot paper, it is an enormously empowering moment to place the X in one of the boxes, to think that my vote counts and I can choose. Being able to choose is one of the values of our culture. Whether it's choosing what we eat from Tesco Direct, or choosing the present for Mum on Christmas at the Christmas market, or our ability to select what we want is something we value. We do the same with religion. We choose whether to believe in God and which God we want to believe in. Whereas 100 years ago in Hampshire, the choice of which religion to follow might have been fairly limited, in this pluralistic age, there are lots of gods to choose from. I don't mean different world faiths like Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism or Christianity. The gods we choose today are much more likely to be money, sex or power. We devote one of our most precious resources we have, our time, to accumulating wealth for our security, satisfying our sexual preferences, or displaying status symbols that demonstrate our prowess. We pride ourselves in our ability to choose, forgetting perhaps the most important thing. God chooses you. We don't choose God. God chooses us. Jesus put this to his disciples just before he said goodbye to them. He said, "You did not choose me, but I chose you." They thought that they had decided to become followers of Jesus, but Jesus says God is far more active than we think. God is revealing himself to us all the time. He chooses you and me to be his agents of peace and love. The guy with a cat flap, who makes the most wonderful barrel stalls on the Christmas market, who brews up mulled wine in the enormous copper vat, said to me one morning, "I just want to see people happy. That innate desire that we all have to smile with joy when someone... the innate desire we all have to smile with joy when you make someone happy comes from God choosing you to be the person who loves. Isn't that something worth voting for?
We now have letters to the editor. Quite a few of the letters were political because, of course, the Chronicle came out on the morning of the election day, and we have not put them in because they are not particularly relevant now. So with the other letters, we'll start with Nick, please.
Yes, and the first one is from David Carter. Private versus public. Sir, I am sad that Peter Rees finds my letter patronising when I describe the charitable efforts of some large private schools. Chronicle Letters, November 21st. My intention was quite the opposite. And far from Dickensian times, these charitable activities date from far earlier than those Victorian deprivations. In this most imperfect of all worlds, our education system, both public and private, is far from perfect and contains many inequalities, even in the state sector. I would be astonished if that is not acknowledged by the institutions themselves, and it is doubtless why so much effort by public schools is put into assisting state schools by sharing their facilities and providing other assistance. It is not a question of conscience salving, more a system of altruism that should be applauded. Whilst not running a food bank, I'm sure Winchester College could give good account of the activities they pursue to provide assistance to the state sector and the wider community that is required inter alia to preserve their charitable status. These activities are not new, but derived from the foundation of the private schools themselves. It is worth pointing out that the right to choose education is enshrined in the European Convention of Human Rights. The right to own property is similarly established, but there is also an economic argument in favour of independent schools. Those schools save the taxpayer £3.5 billion a year from students not being in state education. They generate £4.1 billion of annual tax revenue and support 303,000 jobs. Nationalising the assets of some of the best schools in the world will not improve the life chances of young people left behind by the education system. Destroying good schools will not make others better. It is a disgrace that an estimated 100,000 children a year leave education without basic qualifications. And the answer to that is more funding of the state sector. That is the task before the next government, if we can ever escape the present Brexiternity. And that's from David Carter, Ashton Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
The next letter is about free parking. Sir, I often park without incident in the 2-hour free parking zone in Norman Road, Winchester. Yesterday, December the 4th, I returned to my car less than 2 hours after I parked it to discover a parking penalty notice affixed to my windscreen. I had no idea why. There was no unmissably visual reason for this. I walked to the nearest parking sign and saw that the parking zone had been changed to permit parking just a few days ago. There was a white notice in very small print that explained the change attached to the signpost. I think that this change has been managed in an inadequate manner. People parking in Norman Road will no doubt fall into two categories. Those like me who park there often and others who are parking there for the first time. Those parking for the first time could be expected to check the restrictions on the parking sign. I, on the other hand, had no reason to suspect that something had changed. Do you check the signs every time you park in a familiar place? The parking authority must do a better job warning regular parkers. For example, a group of sandwich-style, brightly coloured signs spread out along the changed zone. An even more effective approach would be to issue a warning ticket for the first violation. The software that the council uses should easily be able to record this and issue a real ticket the next time a vehicle violates the new restriction. There is also a wider issue to consider. All the dwellings have off-street parking, so why has the street been rezoned to permit parking? And as a Winchester Council taxpayer, why didn't I have a realistic chance to object? Free parking is becoming scarce in Winchester. Winchester residents should have a better say in decisions relating to parking zoning. Now, this letter comes from Chris Mills of Andover Road, Barton Farm. But there is a response from Campbell Williams, who is the lead on the Environmental Services. He subsequently wrote to Mr. Mills, "We do properly consult and advertise changes to the traffic regulations orders in advance of the happening and work closely with local residents in order to do so. However, in this case, we should also have asked the civil enforcement officers who issue the parking tickets to issue warning notices first, which we are now doing for a short period of time, and for which, in this case, we apologise. As a result, your penalty charge notice will not be pursued further by us, and so please consider it cancelled in this case."
Nouns and verbs. Sir, the Americans have done it again, turning a noun into a verb. In this case, they have made a verb out of the noun gift. Not only this, but the old and highly respected Hampshire Chronicle has endorsed its use. On page 35 of this week's edition of your newspaper, dated December the 5th, you print, "It's Christmas, your guide to gifting." Whatever happened to the real verb, older and even more respected than your newspaper, to give, and its present participle, giving, itself a noun? And when and why did fun turn from a noun into an adjective? I hear people saying, "It was so fun." No, it wasn't. It was such fun, or it should have been. We really need a new verb for turning a noun into a verb, and I suggest the term to verb, with its present participle, verbing. Oh dear, I've turned another noun into a verb. Perhaps I shall end up working for the Hampshire Chronicle. This was written by Brian Espiner of Chandler Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
The next one is entitled Gothic Abattoir. "Sir, I feel I must respond to Tim Paget's answer, Chronicle Letters, November 28th, to my letter in the previous week's Chronicle about the inappropriate design proposed for Hyde. How he can claim that the proposed monolithic box he and his architect have designed for the prominent position in Hyde would reflect the history and standing of the location is beyond me, and, it appears, over 130 other objectors. And as far as claiming it takes account of previous buildings on the site since the 12th century, was there an East German bunker, power station, or Gothic abattoir on this site at any time? The only concession it makes to the architecture around it is a rather hard-looking flint wall on the Saxon roadside. Yes, views do vary, but I think in this instance the majority of Hyde's residents are of one mind. This proposed design is not welcome here. Go back to the drawing board. If this design is allowed by the planners, my question is this. What is the purpose of the status conservation area if it is not to protect the integrity of that area?" And that letter's from Pauline Moore, King Alfred Place, Hyde, Winchester.
My letter is a follow-on from what Nick has just read, and it is entitled Chic Design. "Sir, It was helpful to have the response of the applicant, Dr. Paget, to criticism of his proposed new home at the corner of King Alfred Place, Hampshire Chronicle, November the 28th. The accompanying illustration shows what is clearly an example of the well-known architectural genre, chic Brit house. As such, it is a perfectly valid piece of design and a welcome relief from the prevailing taste for Victorian pastiche, if a little large for its position and stated purpose. This letter is from N.R. Hawksmoor Dennis of Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Impartiality. Sir, the Hampshire Chronicle has always been a beacon of impartiality, never campaigning for any political party, whilst maintaining a level of scrutiny respected and admired by many, leaving the most controversial issues to readers in letters to the editor, where they freely vent their comments. The Chronicle's editorial comment on the 28th of November was highly critical of a political party creating a quasi-newspaper, potentially misleading people that the Gazette was a real newspaper. The Chronicle's editorial comment criticised the Liberal Democrats for what was seen to understand to be an underhand posture using a fake newspaper. Much to my surprise, and indeed concern, the Hampshire Chronicle seemingly allowed itself to do the same thing. Whilst recognising the Chronicle is, of course, a real newspaper, to have a second front page, four pages in all, blatantly supporting any political party is certainly contrary to the posture presented by the Hampshire Chronicle and seemingly contradicting the strong editorial comment. Indeed, it is even more alarming where a trusted and valued newspaper is content using its own heading to promote a specific political party, probably the first time in its 246-year history. This letter was by Simon Lever from Juniper Close in Badger Farm. The editor's comment in relation to this: the Hampshire Chronicle continues to uphold its fine tradition of political neutrality despite the criticism it has received for making a commercial decision. As was pointed out in the last week's edition, the opportunity to advertise in the same way as the Liberal Democrats did was available to all parties. As soon as the election was called, and before there was any issue over fake newspapers produced by our political parties, our commercial department was in contact with all the agents to remind them of the advertising facilities we had, one of which was a wrap of four pages around the main body of the newspaper. It was the Liberal Democrats' choice to spend part of their election budget this way, and had any of the other parties chosen to do so, they would have been treated the same way on a first-come basis. The Hampshire Chronicle has always been impartial in its news content, and remains so.
Norma Goodwin writes on the subject of plastic bags. Sir, in the dim and distant past, before the rise of supermarkets, our mothers shopped at a variety of shops dedicated to their wares. When they bought fruit and vegetables, they were weighed by the shopkeeper and placed into paper bags. In their drive to step up to the mark to reduce single-use plastic, Sainsbury's has done the right thing and withdrawn their plastic bags from the fruit and vegetable aisles. But where are the substitute paper bags? Instead, the customer has to buy for 30p a net bag for each product. This might be okay for larger households, as long as they remember to bring them back for reuse each week. But it's really a penalty for small households, especially single pensioners. A rival supermarket provides compostable bags, which Sainsbury's could have done. But no bags at all must be saving them a lot of money at the customer's expense. This, plus the chaos caused by the store makeover, has not gone down well with customers. And time will tell if they remain loyal or drift away elsewhere. And that's from Norma Goodwin, Mumford Road, Oliver's Battery.
And that's the end of the letters. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we go to what's on. Well, we are, of course, all things into Christmas, and every one of the what's on items that I could find was definitely Christmassy. On Thursday, the 19th of December, there's a group Ex Collegio featuring music scholars, recent former pupils and staff from Winchester College, who will be performing a programme of light-hearted Christmas music in aid of Trinity Winchester at the Chapel, Winchester College. It begins at 7:30pm. And for tickets, you can ring 01962 828 636, and it says first come, first served. That was Thursday, the 19th of December. A brass band carol concert will be held at St Lawrence Church in Winchester on Saturday, the 21st, at 6pm. The Caister Orchestra, a university ensemble, will perform with 15 brass instruments, and the concert is free. And also on Saturday the 21st, Consort SW1, a choir formed in London by Richard McVeigh, who was formerly assistant organist at Winchester Cathedral, will perform in St Cross Chapel at 7:30pm. The concert features sacred choral music celebrating Advent and Christmas. It will run as a continuous choral experience with no interval or breaks for applause between pieces. The choir will explore all parts of the building and use vibrant lighting to enhance the spectacular architecture of St Cross. Nothing is said of how to get tickets. And finally, this year's pantomime, Dick Whittington at the Theatre Royal, is getting rave reviews. The national newspaper, The Stage, has given it 5 stars. An audience member is quoted as saying, "I laughed until my sides ached," and "You're never too old." It runs until the 5th of January, and to book tickets, call the box office on 01962 840 440. And now we come to the historical section, and we will start with 200 years ago, please, Nick.
Yes, this piece is from Monday, December 13th, 1819. The restrictive measures introduced by ministers to meet the exigency of this season of peril and alarm here almost exclusively engaged the earnest attention of both Houses of Parliament during the week. With the nature of these bills, which will immediately form part of the law of the land, our readers are already acquainted. The animated discussion to which they have given rise to will be found in our parliamentary report. And now we go to 100 years ago, and Saturday, December the 13th, 1919. Two bits here. First one, whilst we are deliberating what we can give our friend for a Christmas present that he or she does not already possess, for a propos, give Canon Vaughan's new book, Winchester Cathedral, Its Monuments and Memorials, just published by Selwyn Blount of 21 York Buildings, Adelphi. The book does not specifically deal with the architecture of Winchester Cathedral. That has already been done, and well done, by several different competent authorities. And the second piece, the annual Old Boys football match was played on Saturday afternoon and resulted in a win for the school by 3-1. Tea was served after the match by kind invitation of the headmaster.
The brief.
And this one is 50 years ago, Saturday, December the 13th, 1969. Two of the four operating theatres at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, are to be closed for 3 months. As a result, it is likely that the hospital's waiting list of non-urgent cases will increase. Announcing this at a press conference on Tuesday, Group Secretary Mr. H.G. Barrow revealed that the temporary closure had been made necessary by important repair work. "It is with great regret that we have made the decision. We are extremely sorry, but it has to be done," he said. "It would mean," said Mr. Barrow, "that their surgical waiting list would get a bit longer." The two remaining theatres would be able to cope with urgent cases, he stressed. The two theatres will close shortly before Christmas for structural repair work, likely to cost around £5,000. The repairs will mainly involve the construction of steel joists in the roof, but the chance will be taken to carry out other work. There is a second piece from this date. Why should 16 or 17 vehicles create hazard for a public service which is running buses to Winchester from many parts of the county, when the inconvenience to themselves is by comparison very small? This was the question posed by Miss M.A. Ashton, Deputy Town Clerk, summing up on behalf of the City Council at a planning inquiry on Thursday. The Hampshire Executive Council of the National Health Service were appealing against the refusal of the City Council to permit the construction of a vehicular access from the car park to the rear entrance road of the Hants and Dorset bus station. Such a proposal would mean that cars leaving the park would travel 70 feet along the opposite direction to buses entering the station. While the access road is not officially a one-way street, this is a self-imposed restriction by the bus company, who considered it necessary in the interests of safety.
Now on to 25 years ago, Friday, December the 9th, 1994. The number of teenage conceptions in the Wessex region is below the national average. The region's average is 8.8 per 1,000 girls aged 13 to 15, of which 5.2 had abortions. The conception figure compares with the one latest available national average of 9.6, which in itself double the government's target of 4.8 per 1,000. Research on the NHS by Middlesex University Health Research Centre for a forthcoming book, Improving the Health of the Nation, shows that Southampton and South West Hampshire has the highest figure at 11.1, with 6.3 abortions, nearly double the 5.4 and 2.7 respectively of Basingstoke and North Hampshire. Other regional figures are Winchester conceptions at 7 per 1,000 with 5 abortions, Portsmouth and South East Hampshire 10.3 and 5.6 respectively, with Salisbury 6.9 and 5.4 respectively. On to the second piece. Should Winchester Bushfield Camp be an ice rink or an indoor bowling green, a park and ride facility, or should it be left as it is? These were some of the suggestions put forward by councillors at last Thursday's planning meeting of the City Council. Most were concerned at the possibility of building on the site. Patrick Davies and Pat Edwards in particular were concerned about its sensitivity. What to do with Bushfield is the subject of a detailed report that will now go out for public consultation. Greg White, the planning officer, who, with the Chief Planning Officer Simon Birch, drew up the report and told members of the committee, "This is a marvellous backdrop, essential to provide a setting for St Cross Hospital and it's extremely important in the historic as well as in the landscape sense. The site provides a tremendous viewpoint. It's used a lot by walkers, dog walkers, local residents, and a network of informal paths has been created for people in Oliver's Battery, Badger Farm, and Stanmore. In planning terms, it's extremely sensitive. Mr. White reminded committee members that an ancient trackway ran through the site. William Rufus was said to be carried along this way into Winchester after his death while hunting in the New Forest. The planning officer said that the study concluded that the scope for build development, like housing, was non-existent.
And on to Chronicle comment, please, Frieda, followed by first person.
This comment starts with a question. A time now to heal the wounds? It seemed to have lasted all year, but the general election campaign has finally ground to its conclusion. After 6 weeks, we are all going to the polls, hopefully for the last time for 5 years, instead of for the third time in four, or fourth time if you include the 2016 referendum. Winchester and Chandler's Ford has been one of the most hotly contested contests, with the Liberal Democrats knowing that they have to win here to stand any chance of affecting the result nationally. No one really has a clue what is going to happen this evening when the votes are counted. Will Labour votes switch to the Conservatives or the Lib Dems over Brexit? Will remaining Tories switch to the Lib Dems? Will hard-line Tories vote for Steve Brine, even though he is a Remainer? Who knows? Although one YouGov poll yesterday put the Lib Dems ahead of the Conservatives by 47% to 46.
Oh dear.
Whatever the result, let's hope that the chronic anger and aggression that seems now to be ever present in society will somehow begin to be assuaged. Sadly, best not to bank on it.
And first person this week is called Send in the Clowns. It comes from Carly Daziz and is set on election day. As you trudge to the polling station to cast your vote today, you could be forgiven for thinking that whichever way you vote, the outcome will be an exercise in electing someone more likely to have a red nose, oversized trousers, and a collapsing car. It reminds me of when my daughters were in their teens and navigating the shark-infested waters of romantic attachment. I remember number one daughter sagely advising her sisters that all boys are a nightmare. It's all about what kind of nightmare you want. I think most of us are suffering from the nightmare of campaign fatigue. Not surprising, really, considering that under the Fixed Term Elections Act, we have had to endure 6 weeks of campaigning rather than just the 3 weeks of yesteryear. This seems to have generated a series of make-it-up-as-you-go pledges and counter-promises. Apparently, whoever we vote for, we're all going to be better off, either through fantastic giveaways or tax cuts. Then we have to contend with all the commentators telling us how to interpret what the various party spokesmen are saying. Apparently we're not capable of forming our own judgments without the aid of those far cleverer than us. So-called fact-check commentators often serve to confuse rather than to clarify. Oh, how one wants them to just once come off the fence and denounce some harebrained policy as the eyewash it patently is. Granted, there has been rather less of the politics of fear seen in earlier votes. Perhaps politicians have learnt that we don't respond well to hearing them slag off their opponents, especially if their pronouncements are accompanied by outlandish claims akin to the threat of our firstborn being slaughtered. The communications have been relentless too. Time was when you simply had to put up with some extra junk mail by way of party election brochures, which in my household tend to end up in the recycling bin without passing go. Others have suggested they find their cat's box a more appropriate destination for such missives. Now, we have all the social media to contend with. I suppose you cannot blame the candidates, but it's still tiresome. So, what to do? Far be it for me to suggest how you should vote. That is rightly between you and the ballot box. But one thing is sure. Whatever your political proclivities, it's clear we do need a step change in the way we are governed. When I was a child, I thought and spake as a child. In my callow innocence, I really did believe that coalition was the way forward. After all, if there could just be a simple and respectful coming together of views, given goodwill and cooperation, surely we could arrive at consensus, leading to a benign way forward, with which all would feel comfortable. Well, I'm a big boy now, and having had more than a decade of what is essentially coalition government, it just hasn't worked. What we've had instead is a stasis and society surviving despite the efforts of its politicians. It's a survival that has been very testing for most. No one appears to be happy, with many pronouncing a pox on all your houses. Nowhere is this more true than in the world of business. Whatever your politics, it is business, incorporating and leveraging as it does the efforts of working people, that actually drives our well-being. I can tell you that what business is crying out for is stability over a predictable period of years. So here's a thought. When you're standing in the sanctity of the voting booth, pencil in hand, hovering over the ever longer list of candidates, cast your vote for someone who is most likely to give us a decisive overall working majority. That way, at least on Friday, we'll all know where we are and can then get on with our lives.
And of course it is Friday when we're recording and we do know where we are. And perhaps that will be the last of all the election hoo-ha for a little while. And I change to an alternative look at the news from Belgarum. Three new barber shops in recent weeks. There was a time when people would moan about the number of estate agents in Winchester. Then it was building societies. Mobile phone shops were next. Now parts of social media complain about the number of new barbers. The first was on Middlebrook Street in June, and then in the last few weeks, three more have opened. In Parchment Street, Southgate Street and St George's Street. Time will tell whether the city is big enough for all to thrive. But those who have grown tired of sometimes waiting for 45 minutes in a hairdresser's, the more the merrier. And there are pictures of four different barber shops, including a Turkish barber that there are in Winchester. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 13th of November, at 8 a.m. and begins again at 4:02 p.m. in the afternoon. On Wednesday, the 18th of November, it ends at 8:04 in the morning and begins again at 4:01 in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And now we continue with items of general news, and we'll go over to Victoria, please, for the first one.
Campaign to switch on streetlights. A Stanmore resident is urging county chiefs to keep Winchester streetlights turned on all night. Hampshire County Council started to switch off residential road lamps between 1 and 4am back in April this year to save £230,000 per year. But now, Jess Hatt of Battery Hill has started a petition to reverse the changes and already has 480 signatures. She says she became motivated after being woken around 1:20am back in November. Jess said, "I woke to hear a loud roaring sound, which sounded like a car was struggling to start or the clutch was burning out. I opened my bedroom window to see a car hovering outside and two men got in the back of a silver estate and drove up Battery Hill. Because the council had turned the street lights off, it was hard to identify or see what was actually happening at the time. My poor neighbour, who has poor mobility, now cannot drive his car or access many places until his is repaired. The decision to switch off the lights for 3 hours every night came after consultation which saw 5,444 residents' responses and 141 from organisations, including businesses and schools. More than two-thirds of responses were in favour.
Hospital friends make big donations to healthcare. The Friends of Winchester Hospital Charity has donated £21,000 to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for items of medical equipment supporting patient comfort and recovery. An additional £6,000 has been given by the Friends to the Winchester Hospice Appeal, making a total of £181,000 donated to the new facility. The two cheques were presented at the recent 64th annual meeting of the Friends. Members were advised that the management of the Winchester Friends would be transferred to the Hampshire Medical Fund, HMF charity, early in the new year. We have agreed with the HMF that, in order to fully exploit the fundraising potential for the RHCH here in Winchester, we need to utilise their full-time fundraising resources, said retiring Friends Chairman Richard Chisnell. The HMF has already established a network of individual and company contacts throughout the Basingstoke, Winchester and Andover hospital areas and has raised in excess of £500,000 towards their ambitious funding target for the current financial year. The Winchester Friends will remain in existence to allow any local resident or company to donate or bequeath monies exclusively for the Winchester Hospital. Mr. Chisnell said, "The Friends are indebted to the many loyal members for their support over the last 64 years, and particularly the volunteers who have served as trustees or committee members. We hope that Winchester residents will wish to continue their involvement by supporting the events promoted by the Hampshire Medical Fund, who will be announcing further plans for fundraising over the coming months." And this article is accompanied by a photograph showing Richard Chisnell, the retiring chairman of Winchester Friends, Nick Vaughan, the chairman of the Winchester Hospice Appeal, Alex Whitfield, chief executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, and Patrick Piper, treasurer of the Winchester Friends, and they're clasping the two rather large cheques.
Plans for hotel revamp lodged. A Grade 2 listed hotel, which was previously owned by a famous jockey, could be restored to its former glory if planning work is given the go-ahead. The owners of the Grosvenor Hotel in High Street, Stockbridge, have applied to Test Valley Borough Council to carry out various works to the building and garden area, including removing a glass link building between the hotel and annex and erecting a pergola in the garden. The application states, This proposal forms part of a package of works which are designed to restore the hotel both in heritage and commercial sense. It added, the building reads as a landmark building in the town and is one of the largest and most distinctive within the High Street, due in part to its porte cochere, which protrudes forward of the general building line and is particularly prominent as it has a room above it, which in combination forms an important local landmark. Tom Cannon, a famous jockey, owner and trainer of horses, lived in the building after buying it in 1898. It was thought it was built in the early 1800s and was named after Thomas Grosvenor, who had significant property interests in Stockbridge and who was the town's MP in 1824. The hotel remains the headquarters of the Houghton Club, which is the world's oldest fishing club, established in 1822. The applicant said, the Grosvenor Hotel has suffered from an absence of investment over the years, and therefore, despite retaining much of its historic value and original features, appears neglected in places. The need for improvement and renovation has been recognised by the current management regime, who are keen to restore the hotel to former glories and improve its commercial standing. The timber frame and glass link structure, which would be removed, are described by the applicant as modern and poorly designed. While the garden area is said to have limited accessibility, is neglected and unattractive. A neighbour of the hotel, Alex Lawrence of High Street, Stockbridge, has submitted a comment to the Borough Council regarding the proposed plans, highlighting what he believes to be inaccuracies in the application, including that the portico, which the applicants have referred to as a porte cochere, being built circa 1885, he states it was built prior to 1843. And there is a small picture of the hotel frontage, which is probably familiar to many of us, with its yellow brick and its columns supporting its sticking out room above.
Trust outlines objections. The head of Winchester Preservation Watchdogs has been outlining in more detail the reason the City Council was successfully challenged over the £150 million station approach scheme in Hyde. The City of Winchester Trust took action against the council decision to give permission to the scheme next to the railway station. The council accepted it was wrong and agreed to pay the trust's costs, currently undisclosed. In the latest trust newsletter, Chairman Keith Lehman expressed surprise at the council's stance. Mr. Lehman wrote, "We considered that there were a number of planning application infringements which had been disregarded, as well as the fact that the Historic England, the South East Design Review Panel, the National Park Authority, amongst others, had all queried the context, density and height of the scheme. All the comments sent to the WCC were not dissimilar in their content, and one would have thought that at least some of them would have sounded a warning bell, particularly as some had legal implications. The City Council has declined to comment further on the legal setback as it has fallen within the general election campaign and it feels it is constrained by the period of purdah." The article is accompanied by a photograph of a 3D small-scale view model showing relatively high-rise buildings near the station. It is titled Model Showing Latest Plans for Station Approach in Winchester.
Market hailed in Europe top 20. The Winchester Christmas Market has once again made a prestigious top 20 list. European Best Destinations has named the market, which is set up annually in the cathedral grounds, as 14th best in the continent. It is the only one in the UK to make the top 15. Budapest in Hungary topped the chart, receiving 39,448 votes, over 32,000 more than Winchester. In 2018, Winchester's market was voted second best in the UK by Booking.com and one of the top eight in Europe by the New York Post. This year, it will stay until December the 22nd, opening 10:30 a.m. every day. And it's accompanied by a small photograph of the market in the cathedral grounds.
BAFTA honour for Tommy. The first actor with Down syndrome to star in a primetime BBC drama has been named as a new BAFTA member. Tommy Jessop, who lives in Winchester, was named in the British Academy of Film and Television Arts list for 2019. BAFTA members form a community of around 8,000 people worldwide working within the film, games and television industries. They support charitable aims, act as mentors to a more emerging young talent, and take part in the organisation's guru programmes. Tommy's acting credits include BBC One's Coming Down the Mountain, starring alongside Hollywood actor Nicholas Hoult. His mother, Jane Jessop, is the founder of Blue Apple Theatre, a Winchester-based company that supports performers with learning disabilities. And there's a charming photo of Tommy to go with the article.
Public House reopens after six-figure refurbishment. An Otterbourne pub has reopened its doors once again following a 330,000 transformation. The Old Forge in Main Road has undergone major refurbishment to give the eating and drinking spot a modernised, stylish and contemporary feel. The bar was officially opened on Saturday last week after invited guests enjoyed a sneak preview on Friday. The general manager, Giuseppe, who has been with the Old Forge for 2 years and has 20 years hospitality experience, said, "The Old Forge is a hugely popular destination and provides a hub for the local community, so we're really excited to be part of the team as it begins its next chapter. We have made some stunning changes that have allowed us to create a modern, open and stylish look and feel to the pub, making it an ideal spot for friends and family to get together. We have loved unveiling the brand new pub to our guests. As part of the refurbishment, the pub has received a full makeover with a private dining area available for reservation, along with a seasonal menu featuring a broad range of dishes. Its team has also grown with several new people hired to fill various roles. Leading the team is brand new head chef L, who has over 10 years experience in the industry. There are two photos accompanying this, one of the brand new sign, the Old Forge Pub and Dining, and some of the inside changes, which indeed look very inviting, a lovely setup for a nice lunch.
New Nature Centre for Children is approved. He was the 16-year-old Winchester naturalist who was killed in an avalanche a few days before Christmas 2013. Cameron Bespolker, a bird watcher and talented photographer, was on holiday in the Austrian Alps when he was buried by a wall of ice. Now, a cottage near No Man's Land and the New Forest is set to become a permanent memorial to the Winchester teenager. The National Park Authority has approved plans to turn the property into Cameron's Cottage, a residential education centre where young people will immerse themselves in nature. The accommodation and research facility will occupy part of a woodland reserve run by the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. The project, a partnership between the RSPB and the Cameron Bespolker Trust, aims to provide visitors from schools, colleges and universities with a lifelong love of nature. Cameron's passion for conservation was ignited at a similar outdoor retreat in Florida. RSPB leaders hope Cameron's Cottage will also act as a catalyst encouraging young people to interact with the environment in a way which boosts their own well-being and that of the planet. Cameron's mother, Corinne Cruikshank, is co-founder of the Cameron Bespoke Trust, which has raised £425,000 towards the cost of the transforming the property. She said, "Now more than ever, children and teens are widely disconnected with their natural outdoor environment and are spending more and more time indoors. We know that nature is important to their development in every way, and there is a real need to educate young people as the future guardians of our planet." And this article is accompanied by a photograph of Cameron when he was 16. A strong love of nature. He's wearing a little blue hat and there's a blue bird sat on top of it.
Marwell to host brand new toy brick creatures. Marwell Zoo will be home to dozens of new species as it becomes the first attraction in the world to host a collection of super-sized toy brick creatures in 2020. Super-sized, this is written in capitals, an astonishing larger-than-life brick adventure will feature up to 40 models of curious, real-life creatures. The event at the zoo from April the 4th to September the 3rd, starting with 30 sculptures of various sizes in 16 locations and with more models arriving through the summer. Following the success of Brickosaurs, the new adventure has been created with more than 2 million toy bricks and will include some of the deadliest creatures in the world, all blown up to enormous proportions. From sneaky predators such as the fearless honey badger and venomous blue-ringed octopus to the aptly named assassin bugs, all creatures have been chosen for their colourful appearance in nature, unusual natural abilities, and because they can be magnified to an eye-popping size. And sadly, there is no accompanying photograph.
Lottery winner. A lucky Winchester resident has scooped an early festive treat of £60,000 thanks to their postcode. The winner, who lives in Hyde Street, was announced after SO238SD was named as a winning postcode in the People's Postcode Lottery on Wednesday the 11th of December. The identity of the winner has not been revealed. The prize was drawn as part of People's Postcode Lottery's special Christmas campaign. One lucky postcode is being drawn out each day in December, with every player in that postcode winning a whopping £30,000 per ticket. Offering his congratulations, People's Postcode Lottery Ambassador, Daniel Johnson, said, "This time of year can be especially busy and sometimes really expensive. Hopefully our winner today can use the money to treat themselves or their family with some festive treats ahead of the big day. Winning £60,000 just before Christmas is such an exciting gift. It's also amazing knowing that thanks to our players, local causes and charities are being supported too. It's a real win all round for everyone."
Airstock pupils entertain shoppers in the Brooks. Following yet another successful performance at the Christmas light switch-on, 64 children in the Hairstock Primary School choir sang for the crowds of shoppers at the Brooks Shopping Centre in Winchester on Thursday, December the 5th. This has become an annual event, and the children are equally excited about the bus journey as the singing itself. Wearing Santa hats and choir t-shirts, the children sang with enthusiasm and entertained everyone who heard them. Their next performance is to support Father Christmas when he visits the March Hare on December the 23rd. And that is entitled, accompanied by a photograph, an aerial shot of the 64 primary school children in the Brooks Centre.
Poignant book launch without the author. Friends and family have gathered to remember a local woman who finished a book about dying shortly before her death. The Reverend Ruth Scott was the presenter of BBC Radio 2's Pause for Thought for 23 years, first with Terry Wogan, then with Chris Evans. She was diagnosed with an aggressive form of cancer in 2017 and was cared for by Southampton General Hospital, mainly the lymphoma team. Much of her book, entitled Between Living and Dying, Reflections from the Edge of Experience, was written while she was an inpatient on the oncology ward, and her final broadcast was with Chris Evans from her hospital bed, when she had only a few weeks to live. She died shortly afterwards on February the 20th this year. Chris Evans described her as beautiful, brave, and most of all, inspiring. Ruth said in the foreword of her book that her beloved husband Chris had been her strength and stay, and that her daughter Freya and son Tian had continually inspired her. She said she wanted her book to be a meditation on life, not death, offering observations and asking questions that have occurred to her through this gap year. In the foreword, Richard Holloway wrote, "This book is not for the faint-hearted. You will read vivid descriptions of her treatment and its consequences, and the humour that often attended both. It is a wrenching read, but is also funny and affectionate. It is a magnificent tribute to Britain's National Health Service and the people who make it work, often against incredible odds. A gathering of family and friends to celebrate the publication of Ruth's book was held recently at the Quaker Meeting House in Colebrook Street, when copies of the book, which Ruth only finished a few days before her death, were sold. Between Living and Dying, Reflections from the Edge of Experience, copies of the book are available from the publishers, Berlin Limited at www.berlin.co.uk, and Berlin is spelt B-I-R-L-I-N-N, so www.berlin.co.uk, and at amazon.co.uk. And there is a photograph. The cover of the book is splashed with beautiful strips of brilliant stripes of colour, a lovely photograph of Ruth on the back.
Tree is blessed as cathedral lights up. Winchester Cathedral's Christmas tree lights have been switched on during a short ceremony as part of the annual blessing of the Christmas tree. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, blessed the tree before the lights were switched on by Maxwell Trenier, aged 4. Boy choristers then sang carols by the Christmas tree. The Christmas tree will remain on display at the west end of the cathedral throughout December, and visitors can hear the chorists singing at a variety of services. On December the 17th, 18th and 20th, carol services will be held at 6:30 p.m. The first service is ticketed with priority booking for the cathedral community. The second and third services are not ticketed and all are welcome. On Christmas Eve at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. there will be dress-up nativity services. At 5 p.m. there will be a crib service that will be blessed. There are two photographs accompanying the article, one of the enormous Christmas tree in the west end of the cathedral with the choristers in front of it singing, and the second one is of 4 very happy smiling faces of the choristers.
Almshouse Charity launches 2020 programme. The Friends of St Cross have launched their 2020 events programme. At a reception in the historic 100 Men's Hall, the Friends of St Cross announced their events for 2020. John Pringle, Friends Chairman, thanked all the guests for their support during the past year and looked forward to another year of enjoyable fundraising. The programme includes a St George's Day dinner, outings to the Isle of Wight, Highgrove Gardens and Wadsworth Brewery in Devizes. The Friends' summer party will again be at the beginning of June, and the annual lecture will be given by Vice Admiral Sir Charles Montgomery, entitled Britain's maritime strategy. Where next? The Friends help raise funds towards the upkeep of the hospital, the oldest almshouse in the UK. And that article's accompanied by a photograph showing Nigel Atkinson, Fiona Whitehouse, Councillor Eleanor Bell, and the very Reverend Catherine Ogle and John Pringle.
Classic buses recreate services from the past. The Winchester-based Friends of King Alfred Buses had confirmed details of its services for New Year's Day. Whilst in keeping with the policy of recent years, the main running day will be in the spring on Sunday, May the 3rd. A smaller operation involving several King Alfred Buses vehicles will again take place on Wednesday, January the 1st. This will maintain a long-established tradition and provide a service for the many supporters who would still like to travel on these historic buses from one of the last independently owned companies that closed in 1973. The services will be again centred on the Broadway, with the first departure at 9:15 a.m. and the last at 4:20 p.m. A feature this year is the planned use of the two King Alfred 1964 AEC Renowns, 565 LCG and 596 LCG. 595 has seen a complete internal retrim using specially commissioned authentic material, whilst 596 has been repainted in National Bus Poppy Red, recalling the 1970s, after King Alfred operations and vehicles had passed to National Bus. Also envisaged is a free vintage bus service to and from Southampton via the former Hants-Dorset Route 47, departing at 9:45 a.m. and 2:45 p.m. from the Broadway to Southampton Civic Centre Road, returning at 10:45 a.m. and 3:45 p.m. And there is one of these double-decker buses heading to Chandler's Ford and Southampton. It's arriving at a bus stop in St Cross and is looking particularly splendid in its new red livery.
Hunger strike over global climate crisis. We face extinction if we don't act now to stop climate change. That is the message from a Winchester-born woman who fasted day and night for several weeks to draw attention to the scale of the current climate and ecological emergency. Maria Leslie spent more than 2 weeks joining more than 500 people taking part in a global hunger strike from Israel to India, Ecuador to Australia, New Zealand to the UK, people have chosen to go hungry as a mark of their love for the earth. Ms. Leslie only took plant milk and fruit juice in solidarity with these hunger strikes. As part of her fast, the 42-year-old contacted local parliamentary candidates to tell them about her mission and asked them to pledge action to halt the loss of biodiversity and reduce greenhouse emissions to net zero by 2025. All three main party candidates responded, but clear pledges were not forthcoming for action by 2025. She said, "I was surprised by Mr. Brine's response when he said that climate change emergency is the real issue at this election and is bigger than Brexit and all of us. This seems in total contrast to his shameful voting record on climate issues. Out of 13 votes on climate issues since 2010, he has only voted for the planet twice. Strangely, this is not mentioned in his Green Winchester website." Her actions drew attention to the millions who face hunger every day and to highlight food vulnerability. As the world heats up, billions more will be at risk of starvation from climate and ecological collapse. She added, "If governments support, enforce and encourage people to admit and to reduce carbon emissions to zero and halt biodiversity loss, we can do it." She ended her fast after travelling by coach to Madrid with other UK protesters to join Extinction Rebellion demonstrations at the United Nations Climate Conference. This meeting takes place every year and has been the setting for the negotiations of both the Kyoto Protocol and the Paris Agreement. This article is titled Marie Leslie at a recent exhibition Extinction Rebellion protest in Winchester, and she is dressed in a hooded black top with spiderweb gloves, significant jewellery and piercings, and she's attached to a tree.
And the next piece is entitled New Smile for Ivy's 100th. It's not every day that somebody turns 100 years old, and it's even more rare for them to celebrate at the dentist. Ivy Ward became a centenarian on Wednesday, December the 11th. She was gifted a brand new set of bespoke dentures by Lee Butler, a professional at Solutions Dental in Winchester. Lee said that Ivy was a regular visitor over the last 9 years and was very keen to reward her unwavering loyalty. He added, "Ivy is such a lovely lady with a beautiful smile. She deserved to have new dentures." Ivy never missed an appointment in 9 years, and her dentures were the perfect way of saying thank you while showing how important regular checks are. And that article is accompanied by a picture of Lee with Ivy, and Ivy smiling and showing her new set of dentures.
Thousands face loneliness. More than 220,000 elderly people are struggling with loneliness in the South East, new figures have revealed. A new survey for Age UK's No One Should Have No One to Turn To campaign finds that Christmas is the loneliest time of the year for more than 220,000 older people in the region, with those who have been widowed feeling it the most. Age UK's research found that 80% of over 65s in the South East agree that the first Christmas after losing someone loved is the hardest, with up to 26,000 older people in the region facing their first Christmas without their spouse. The charity is calling for public support. Across the UK, the research found that over 750,000 older widowed people often feel more lonely over Christmas than at any other time, with over 200,000 older widows and widowers not looking forward to the festive season because they will be alone. Dev Griffin, Age UK ambassador, said, "We should all be taking a few minutes out of our day to chat to those around you, whether it's your granddad or the lady at your bus stop. You could be the first person they've spoken to for a long time."
City's Michelin-starred restaurant plans to expand. Winchester's only Michelin-starred restaurant has applied for an extension. An application has been lodged by the Black Rat in Chesil Street for a two-storey extension which will house two new dining areas and a modern kitchen. The proposal was originally submitted to Winchester City Council in May, but revised plans were submitted late last month. The application has been backed by customers of the highly successful restaurant and residents living nearby. Robin Wedderburn of St Giles Close said, "The design of the proposed extension looks absolutely stunning, and the increased space for the Black Rat will hopefully ensure long-term growth and sustainability of an independent business in Winchester City." And Ian Tate wrote, "I am certain that the style is actually the right solution for this building, so I'm fully supportive of the proposals." It has also got the support of the City of Winchester Trust, which said it reflects the style of the Black Hole and the Black Boy and felt that the design was very appropriate in the context. However, the Winchester Design Review Panel has criticised the application, calling for designers to go back to the drawing board. A report said, "The current design would benefit from further refinement of details. It appears to mix elements from the arts and craft period with more restrained Victorian features, and as a result, this undermines its integrity somewhat. A stronger and more definitive design should be sought which creates a high-quality building within a varied townscape setting. The proposal will now go before the Council's Planning Committee on Wednesday." The article is accompanied by a watercolour drawing of the impression of how the Black Boy extension could look.
tennis medalist at King's. A number of King's School pupils and staff from the Pupil Support Department enjoyed an action-packed morning with Paralympic tennis medalist Peter Norfolk. Peter was on hand to deliver a brand new set of sports wheelchairs to the school and also experience the newly refurbished sports hall floors. A spokesperson at the school said, "These will be a real jewel in the crown and support the already extensive adapted sports provision at the school." Peter spent considerable time with the pupils and put them through their paces and a number of drills. He also shared some of the entertaining stories of his travels and encounters from travelling the world as an international sports person. The spokesperson added, "King's were also delighted to welcome back long-term friend at the school, Littleton tennis coach Chris Hughes." And that little piece is accompanied by a photograph of Peter Norfolk in his wheelchair shaking hands with another young student also in a wheelchair.
Homeless charity talks of plans to expand city base. Work on a major expansion of the Emmaus Centre in Winchester is starting. The charity that helps formerly homeless people is expanding at its base in Bar End. On Wednesday, December the 4th, Emmaus Hampshire welcomed over 100 companions and supporters to celebrate a highly successful year helping the county's homeless. This has seen record sales in its upcycled furniture shops and £250,000 secured for a project to accommodate 8 more formerly homeless people in its Winchester community. Nigel Samuels, chief executive, said, "This is the story of a family. The companions and volunteers have continued to work together to develop the charity. Work starts today on our 40 at 20 construction project. This will enable 8 more people to benefit from the happy and fulfilling community we've all created here. Companion occupancy levels are at a record high, and the charity has secured additional funding for their training and development. Training, from furniture refurbishment courses and driving lessons to Spanish classes, plays a key role in rebuilding confidence and providing skills which help companions secure permanent employment and move on to independent living. At the heart of the celebrations was the work and dedication of the companions themselves. Companions constantly demonstrate their support to those less fortunate than themselves through their solidarity programme, which has delivered £20,000 of resources to help families in poverty this year. Companions Claire, Darren, Neil and Tony, along with volunteer Sue Joyce, were recognised with awards, including a weekend in Paris, organised by Room to Reward. Emmaus Hampshire's dedicated team of volunteers will also enjoy afternoon tea donated by new charity partner Hotel Duvin on Southgate Street, Winchester. Emmaus Hampshire is already planning, focusing on its future, with plans to open a 4th retail store, provide more accommodation, and more actively participate in the fight for environmental change. And there is a picture of companion Tony holding the award he's received and looking very happy about it.
Charity dinner raises £12,000. Organisers of a charity inaugural black tie dinner were bowled over by attendees' generosity after the event generated more than £12,000. Andover 21, a charity dedicated to providing help and support to children with Down syndrome, staged a black tie dinner at the Grosvenor Hotel in Stockbridge last Friday. The event was attended by 90 patrons who helped raise the £12,750 on the night, which will support children with Down syndrome from Andover, Salisbury, Newbury, Winchester and the surrounding villages. Guests were welcomed to the event by the sound of swing music. They also had the chance to have a flutter on the Tree of Wishes with a £10 ticket, buying anything from a booby prize to a £50 restaurant voucher, a necklace or a beauty treatment. All prizes were donated by local businesses. The three-course feast was then served before the reveal of a multi-layered rainbow cake, mirroring the Andover 21 logo and designed by Hampshire artist Jenny Maisels. Following dinner, guests took part in an auction featuring 16 lots donated by individuals and businesses. Chairperson of the Andover 21, Anna Fovell, said, "We were bowled over by the generosity of our sponsors and guests who help us raise an incredible $12,750 will be used to provide invaluable education services to local children with Down syndrome." The article is accompanied by a photograph, very glitzy indeed, of a compere in black tie and three ladies in evening gowns.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And to our readers, Victoria Hooton.
Thank you and happy Christmas.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye. And do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you and goodbye.